When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Girl, happy Elden Ring Day. How are you,
Hooray!
I am very good. I am smelding the Belden. You know what I'm saying? I have
no idea what that means, but I'm going to assume it's some sort of Elden Ring phrase that you've picked up from your time looking at the game. Now, I've been staying away from everything other than reading stuff there this morning that apparently the day one patch is breaking it left, right, and center, but just hoping that it gets better.
I've been watching with kind of, you know, is it called Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude.
Taking joy in someone else's mistakes.
Yeah, I've kind of been having a bit of that today because I've been looking at all of the streamers who managed to get their copy early. And so they've been playing since last night. Mm. And I've been watching like Fextra Live play it and some of the other people. They're like thousands upon thousands of people play, watching them play and having a great old time. And then this morning I've logged on and seen them playing it where the patch has been installed. And they're like, ooh, performance issues seems to be hitting us quite hard. Let's switch from PS5 over to PC. Let's make sure we play it on the PC, shall we? Mm-hmm.
The thing that's doing the rounds at the minute, and I absolutely hope it's not another, oh my God, it's actually really broken launch day thing. But apparently the day one patch is making things worse, but hopefully not in a demonstrable way.
So there is the patch is needed though, because the PS5 players are telling us that the first cutscene can sometimes just brick the entire game, black screen the entire thing. So it's just, if you can get past the cutscene, then things are fine.
The thing that made me itch was Digital Foundry said that the PS4 version has more consistent performance. And I was like, can you just, I've spent the money, lads. I'm in, I've bought the tickets. I'm here waiting for the gig. You're telling me that I could have just been better off with the old system. That's just ridiculous. Anyway,
what a time to be alive, eh?
Exactly. And it's like, this is gaming now. We just Google quality versus performance mode and hope for the best. Maybe it's patched or not. But yeah, this is the Untitled Battle Podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello.
UBP, every single UBP. Week, UBP, we ask all people's thoughts, questions, whatever they'd like us to talk about. And we've got a lovely bunch of coconuts in. We had a whole bunch of stuff last week as well. And we put a fresh tweet out to just see what people would like us to talk about from this week of gaming. So we'll get to as many as we can. First question from Jack Asbury, who says, hey guys, happy Elden Ring Day. Well, happy the same to you. This is going to be my first Soulsborne game. So my question is, am I crazy for jumping in at this stage? We also had a question from Darren Martin saying, hey guys, thinking about getting this, but never played a Souls game before. Okay. If I was going to start with one, which game would you suggest? Have a cracking day. YouTube.
Thank you very much for your nice, kind words as well, lads. I would say that this is the perfect place for you to jump in because after watching all the footage and having a brief bit of time with the game myself, I am looking at it thinking that this is the perfect distillation of what the Dark Souls ethos actually is. Mm. It's challenging in places, but because of the open world layout of the game, it means you can go and approach different areas, back off, go and try something new. And that was always the thing that I found not discouraging about the Dark Souls games prior, like Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. But I did feel that sometimes it would bottleneck you into, you cannot get past this until you're good enough to do it. And that's fine, because that's what these games are all about. It's overcoming the challenge. Mm. But here, it means that you get to decide your own difficulty ramp by going, I'm going to explore over here, get my ass kicked. Maybe I'll get one or two enemies, but they're worth a lot more souls and stuff like that. It's fun. I think that it's the best explained in terms of an upfront story. Like, you are given all of the details straight away as to what your goal actually is quite clearly. You meet people along the way within the first 10, 15 minutes that actively tell you where you need to go, what you need to do. There's helpful little things like, you know, when you get to the, we'll just call them bonfires for the sake of people understanding what they are.
Do they call them runes now instead of souls? Like, we've had it's runes echoes instead of,
it's runes instead of souls. What happens is that when you light up the bonfire, if there is a main quest active, you may see a ray of light in forming an arc going from the bonfire, pointing you in the right direction as to where your next main goal is. Okay. There's little things like that that have made it so that this is a perfect jumping in point. Plus, you get the added benefit of all of those years of trial and error from software, tweaking the formula, making sure that it's best it possibly can be. Personally, I found that that capped out at Dark Souls 3. I really love the way that they approached that game. And I would say that this is what it is. It feels like 3, but with stealth elements added in from Sekiro. And that is not a bad thing.
No, that's the thing. I've seen a lot of people saying it's the culmination of everything that they've learned. And one of the things that I love, I was thinking about this in light of Horizon and how safe Horizon feels, and how, you know, so many different things feel like they have to be this massive cross-media franchise thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you see Sony pushing into cinemas, and you see like Horizon's going to be a VR experience, and there are all these big things. And I feel like, other than Dark Souls, FromSoft have always done a new IP every single time. And I kind of love that about them. And I love that you're kind of seeing, like, Elden Ring, like you said, it's like this culmination of all the Dark Souls lessons, maybe some of the speedier combat from Bloodborne, and then some of the parrying and the stealth from Sekiro, and it's kind of everything all in one. For me, I think that if you've never played any Soulsborne games, you should still do the original Dark Souls remastered. Like, I was on that a couple of nights ago, just prepping for Elden Ring, because that game has been patched on next gen. Like, it does run, it's 1800p, but it runs at 60 FPS, which I know PC folk have always had solid frame rates, but us console peasants had 30 FPS for the last decade. So,
mate, you had 5 FPS if you got to Blighttown for the pre-patch, man. That was bad. That was slideshow.
Flipbook frame rates. But yeah, I would still say go experience the original Dark Souls. Even if you don't finish it, but at least you know where they're coming from. I think that'll let you appreciate the stuff that Jules is talking about. It's a nice companion piece, I would think.
And also, it's always in sale, so it's super cheap. Like, because of Elden Ring coming out, I'm pretty sure they're going to do a From Software like franchise sale, and they'll probably be able to pick it up real cheap for that.
Yeah, but it's like overall, they're a really fascinating studio to watch right now. Like, they're kind of on the form of their lives, and it seems like Elden Ring is their crowning achievement. I'm sitting at home as we record this. I'm watching out the window, waiting for my copy of Elden Ring to arrive. I can't wait to dive in. But I got some fancy special edition thing. Otherwise, I would have been on it since midnight. But yeah,
it's
huge, by the way.
That's what I keep hearing,
that it's at the biggest game world ever.
I was watching Rach, big shout out to Rach, do her Twitch stream this morning. And she has the thing. It's bigger than her head, and it's like down to where her hair ends.
I thought you meant the size of the game world.
No.
The actual special edition thing. Yeah,
the special edition thing is huge. Yeah, it's absolutely huge.
Well, there's loads of, like, there's a collector's figure version. There's a one with, like, a big,
I think that's the one
thing
she's got,
I want the one with the big lion man on it. I don't know who anyone's called. I just know there's a lion man. Oh, yeah, he's mates with a lion. There's a lion in there, basically, is what I'm saying. But overall, yeah, Elden Ring's going to be the thing that a lot of people are talking about. It kind of feels crazy just how much stuff is out now, like Horizon, Elden Ring, Pokemon, Dying Light. It's just left, right, and center. But next question from Suguru, who says, with the announcement of Street Fighter 6 having just happened, what is your favorite fighting game of all time?
Oof, that's a tough question.
Tekken 3, Jules.
Well, Tekken 3 is a monumental game. Don't get me wrong. It's absolutely flawless. Plus, obviously, the sheer salty rage that you could create by just spamming Eddie's low kicks attacks, or is it Lei Wu?
Eddie does the capoeira stuff where he's just spinning on the spot.
Lei, where you can, like, drop down onto the floor and pretend to be asleep and then do the drunken fighting style. That was great fun.
All the Sacha Boskonovich stuff.
Oh, mate, yeah. But in terms of, like, my favorite fighting game, I had a lot of fun with Dragon Ball FighterZ, or FighterZ, if you want to be that type of guy. But I also was thinking about this the other day, like, what fighting games have come and gone that didn't get, like, their true chance to shine. Skullgirls is phenomenally good. Okay. And also there's a fighting game whose name I cannot remember, but I could describe it, and I'm hoping that somebody will message me with what it is. It's a 2D, like, hand-drawn, like, anime style thing, but it's set in, like, a fantasy realm.
Okay.
And one of the characters is like a squire with a lance, and then there's a giant knight. It's all like like high fantasy based, and it's utterly brilliant. Because
is that
like,
not the thing that they just brought back in the Capcom announcement?
No, it wasn't. Name is now. No, it wasn't that one. But that's actually what got me thinking of it, because when I saw that Capcom announcement thing for all those games, I was so happy to see the Darksiders, Darksiders.
It's something like that's what I'm trying to think of. It's something,
you know,
like that.
Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's too early in the morning. I can't remember which one it is, but I could see it's the love for all of these like fighting game franchises that haven't had the repackages, and it was like only one Street Fighter game in that collection. I was like, good, Capcom are actually appreciating the fact that some people have got every single version of Street Fighter 2.
As well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I remember me and you, I was thinking of this yesterday, when Street Fighter 2 first came to Switch, we did a review for it, which I think is still on the YouTube, on the channel, but it was the first time Street Fighter came to the Switch. And that's the thing, if I'm talking about the best fighting game of all time, part of me, the absolute simp in me, would go back to Street Fighter 2. Like, that game is timeless for a reason, and that would be my favorite Street Fighter. But yeah, in terms of fighting games, definitely Tekken 3 is always my crowning jewel. Mortal Kombat 11, I think, is right up there as well.
It's so polished, isn't it?
Mortal Kombat 11. The fighting's so good. The balancing is so good. They finally found a way to like nerf Scorpion's spear, so you can't just do that over and over again. But yeah, what did you think of the Street Fighter 6 stuff? Because we've not talked about that. He's Ryu's a very wide boy.
He is. They've gone for thickness, haven't they? Over
I think they're
this
trying
one.
To do the male version of what happened with Lady Dimitrescu. I think they're just going down, because I showed it to my wife and she went, oh, hello.
Yeah.
Oh, very, very wide, this man. And I was like, oh, are you trying to do this sort of like super sexy character over the top thing, but for the male physique rather than overblown chesticles from Lady Dimitrescu?
I feel like there's like an appreciation for the beef that is more than ever shown in this
beef
current day and age. Yeah, well, I think beef creation, like a brief. There's a joke somewhere.
Yeah,
somebody
will
find that joke. so I do agree with you, and I love the fact that Luke's come back from an old Street Fighter character, who's the guy who squares up to him. Not entirely sure if they're meant to suggest that he's Ryu's like student now. I'm not entirely sure.
I said that I saw that he was built up as some big deal. Like he's meant to be a big deal. I didn't know who he was until I saw
it's always strange not to see Ken whenever you see Ryu, though, isn't it? It's always a bit like off-putting, like, where is he?
Do you think Ken will be super beef as well, or do you think they'll differentiate him, give him the super long hair and stuff again?
I just want to see him be like the full-on antagonist to the thing. Move over M. Bison, let's go, like, all your friends betray you sort of thing. I'm not keen on the logo of Street Fighter 6.
No, I saw people saying that it's literally taken from like a Photoshop template thing. Like, people pointed to the original one and they said like it just looks like Capcom have taken this really basic hexagonal logo, and there's already a version existing with S and F in it, and then they've just added a little number 6 in the corner. So it mustn't be the final one. There's no way it's final. But why would you debut with that? It's a bit of a shame.
Ridiculous.
Yes, but overall, I think that Street Fighter 6, all that stuff is apparently in-engine in the teaser, so it seems like it is going to be this massive visual upgrade from where Street Fighter 4 and 5 were.
I am hyped for it. Like, don't get me wrong, I will get this game when it comes out, but I'm always going to
not done it for me in a while.
Well, I just remember the sort of absolute debacle that was the Street Fighter 5 launch, where they said, "Yeah, here's a full price game. There's no story mode. There's a bare bones training mode. All you get is literally just like the fighting engine and online features." And even those were pretty limited at the time. And it's like, this isn't an early access game. This is from a huge publisher with a massive legacy. So why are we being piecemeal experience?
Yeah, they just steered full bore into the esports scene. It was like, well, all we need is the versus mode, because it's going to be it had to be made for the Capcom Pro Tour that year or something.
Yeah.
So it's hopefully they've learned from that. And I'm curious how it feels. Street Fighter should be up there. It feels like it should be up there with Mortal. I mean, it is in reputation, but like, they haven't had a Mortal Kombat 11 or Tekken 7 sized installment in a while. But yes, next question from Danavan, the Nice Prince. He's got the Nice Prince. He's the Nice Prince.
He's the Nice Prince.
Stuck between playing Cyberpunk and Sifu, which should I complete first? Now, you completed Sifu this week, I think.
I did. I literally came off the back of completing it in my stream that I had on Wednesday over on Live and Let's Die. Plug. It was a fantastic experience. I had such a good time. And the best thing is that if you are in the zone, if you can get into the mindset, you can complete the game in under like 4 to 5 hours, just hammer through all of that. So I would say that it's a great sort of starter to then jump into the next game afterwards. And plus, it is so polished. Like, you can tell that they took what Absolver did for Slow Clap, wasn't it? They both it took the engine and all the things that refined it down to its most simplest elements and just made a stonker of a fighting game.
It's perfect. Like, I think I love Sifu. I mean, the thing is, like, it made me throw a controller across the room. It made me bite a controller, but I still think it's my game of the year so far. I think it's absolutely pristine and easily recommendable.
What's funny is that like games like Dark Souls and stuff like that, I do sometimes have trouble like recognizing patterns and when to dodge because of all like, oh, do I dodge when the strike is going to connect or do I do it before so I actually roll under it? I'm never entirely sure what the hitbox is for it. Whereas this was like, if a punch is being thrown and you are pressing back to dodge out of the way, you will dodge because it's literally just dodge the hit rather than dodge when you think you're about to be hit.
Yeah,
apart from some bosses, obviously, they play with that expectation.
The thing I never have all, because now I'm trying to, I'm so close to the platinum. I need to finish the whole game on less than 25 age. And I'm probably never going to be able to do that. But like, I managed to get to the third boss just staying on age 20. And then her first phase, where it's those big arcing sword swipe whip things, can't dodge them to save my life. I can do the rest of it. It's fine. But like the start of that boss just absolutely destroys me.
But that's the thing. Like every single boss is all like about a different style of play. Mm. So it's like your first boss there where you actually need to push as aggressively as he does. You got Sean, the stick wielding prick who's in the second one there. And it's literally all just about like standing up next to him and dodging and just getting in the attacks. When it comes to the third boss, it completely throws all that out the window. Mm. It just says, right, you have to wait for your opening and just chip away slowly, but slowly. And you know, when she does the spinning attack where she does like a whirlwind of like things, just hold block and smash block.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
it's like not human centipede, but it's like giraffe centipede from Sekiro.
Yes,
like you have to jump down and just take the parry hits to break its own like stamina gauge thing. And it's like, once I found that out, that boss became a piece of cake. Like, I've gotten through that boss. Now I'm at the tower, which is the fourth one, at level 23 with my Shaggy character, because obviously I've modded the game straight away. And I still, unfortunately though, I don't think that that's good enough, because I think you need level 20 going into the fifth boss, because he kicked my ass
that
so
final
many
fight. When you're talking about spamming L1, I watched Dan, shout out to Dan Allen Gaming, I watched his strat for the final boss, because I was like, I'm going to see what other people are doing to beat this final boss. And he was saying, you can pretty much just hammer L1 in the first phase of the last fight and just block everything, because the windows line up. So the first phase of the last fight is actually really easy. It's the second phase after that, where Yang starts coming at you with a mix of unblockable stuff or harder to block stuff, where spamming won't get you anymore and his timings are different and everything else.
Did you enjoy the fact that as soon as you get up to me, you try to use your focus thing, you just can't use focus against it? It's like, oh no, I've sunk so many points into this. Well, oh God, so, no.
You've just put in the Buddha statue just before then, you've probably just banked, or whatever the statue is, you've just banked XP on the final focus move, and you can't use the damn thing. Because one of the only trophies that I've got left to do is a level 3 focus move. So it's like, like that I need to put into. Overall though, I don't know, you can't really go wrong. Like between Cyberpunk now is phenomenal. I've actually been playing quite a lot of that across the last week. And so I've always loved Cyberpunk, but it's very much a gorgeous, recommendable game. The story, everything just comes together nicely now. In a way that I think a lot of PC people had before, but the console stuff's caught up to it. And they've made tons of quality of life improvements and stuff. Sifu though is a lot shorter and punchier. And if you get lockstep with its combat, then you'll burn through that pretty fast and in a very nice, satisfying way.
That's the thing. It will be truly satisfying to finish it. Like Cyberpunk is a project, whereas Sifu is like a challenge. And if you can do it, you're just going to feel so much better afterwards.
Massively. Next question from McAllister NYC. I just replayed Cyberpunk 1.5 and had a question about vehicles. When you drive in games, do you do the first person or pulled back view? The former is more immersive, but the latter is easier. Have a great day. You too.
Oh, you too, my friend. But 100% I use the pulled back camera because I like to see what's going on to actually anticipate what's coming.
Who play in first person? Who are they?
It's people who play the F1 games in first person when it's like the cockpit is just full of stuff and they can barely see and they're going like 100, 200 miles an hour. And it's just like, oh, how are you reacting to this?
You know when people do that thing where they put the camera on the very front of the car, so you're not even seeing...
That's fine. I can do that.
That's the thing I can't even do at all, because I'm navigating, like I'm in like a wind tunnel. I'm sort of like, you know...
Yeah, but I just feel like I'm flying at that point. It's like I used to do it on Wipeout when you're just like, whoosh, whoosh.
Oh, that thing, I did that on the VR when it was Wipeout VR and it just gave me immediate motion.
That game is so good.
But that thing, trying to put the camera on the very front of something, that's the one thing I can't do. But yeah, both of us would be the pulled out view.
Yeah.
For the most...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But now I'm going to bring another question in from McAllister from last week, who says, wondering about all these new video game adaptations like Halo, Uncharted, etc. Yeah. Do you feel these should be animated with the original voice actors, or is live action okay? I mean, honestly, who could play Andrew Ryan in the flesh? That's an interesting question, because they did get, I forget the name of the person now, who the voices Cortana, is in the Halo TV series, but yes, she's also a hybrid of like the live action version, the new version of Halsey and everything else. But yeah, I mean, I personally prefer anime. I love the Castlevania anime.
Yeah.
So I think that is a better way to go. I think you can do more with animation that lines up with the games more than live action stuff. But in saying that, I saw Uncharted this week and it was pretty good.
Well, the thing is that like there's like, when you have live action stuff, you've always got the risk of having CGI or VFX elements not lining up to how you imagined it. And like, even the 100 million tentpole blockbusters can have some pretty shoddy graphic works from time to time. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you put it into an animation, then you can control the scene however you want. You can show the action from however you want, and you can keep things consistent throughout, or at least you should be able to do so at a much easier pace.
Yeah, I
personally would much prefer if somebody said, okay, there's a Halo movie coming out and it's live action. I would say if they said, it's a animation or a CGI thing, I probably would prefer the CGI thing, because it would feel closer to what I know from a movie source, from the cutscenes that I've obviously seen rendered before in those games.
It's just, for me, it's like looking at, like I said, Castlevania is incredible, Dragon's Dogma, Dota, like the Devil May Cry anime was great. I know that's a few years old now, but like, it just, there's so much you can do with movement. You can really nail a fight scene in a way. Although we mentioned Sifu before, Sony put out a live action Sifu. It's like a trailer for the game, but it's also just a little mini movie. And the fight scenes in that are brilliant. If no one's seen that stuff and you like good, tight choreography, it's brilliant.
Again, right, okay, so what we're looking at there is an element that was already populated and popularized by film media. Like Kung Fu movies were already a thing that this game replicates to a T. It's not the other way around, where Master Chief is being replicated in live action. That's where it falls down. If that's, you're true, adapting from real life things that have already been made popular, it makes sense when you translate them to video games. It's easier, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think the reason I mentioned the Sifu thing is that they do a cool like CG enhanced animation thing for each attack, so it's like it zooms in more on some of the hits, and they give them camera shakes, and they sort of like they lean into the almost an anime mentality with it a little bit more, which is just a really cool visual to it. In terms of who could play Andrew Ryan, I'm gonna go with Bryan Cranston. I don't know if you have a go-to Andrew Ryan, but I think the stature of Cranston, take his Walter White, let him do the speech from Bioshock, and I think he would nail it.
He probably would do very, very well at that. I'm trying to think of who else.
A man chooses, Jesse.
I'm trying to think of who you could actually cast that would actually do it justice. And it's a very tough job, because
You can accentuate with the golf club very well.
Maybe Josh Brolin, maybe?
That's a show. That's a really good show.
But only because of the fact that he's absolutely stonking in whatever he turns in. I mean, if you could get Daniel Day-Lewis back out of retirement, that would be a good...
Oh, so you know what would be a left field thing? If they got Javier Bardem, like sort of let him be... Because I know he's not direct one-on-one, but I feel like he can do a really regal, controlled performance that slowly gets more unhinged to the point where, not to give away Bioshock's spoiler, but where that scene goes.
Yeah.
He would be the best unhinged guy for where that scene goes. That would be brilliant.
Give it because you know sometimes comedy actors can turn in really good serious roles. Give it to Rob Delaney. I reckon that Rob Delaney could probably turn out a really serious performance. Like,
do you know, I mean, Muscly guy from Always Sunny.
No, that's Rob.
Who's the guy that worked out loads and now he's massive?
I don't know. I mean, that is Mac from Always Sunny. You are describing right. But that's that's not who I'm thinking of. Is it Rob Delaney? He was on a comedy show on Channel 4 recently.
Okay. I reckon. That guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Delaney is.
Yeah, that's Rob Delaney. I reckon that he could make a good Andrew Ryan.
He should have been Sully in that.
I mean, that mustache is
that
stonking,
mustache is
mate.
Sully-esque instead of Mr. Mark Wahlberg, even though, like I said, I like the Uncharted movie. But
Wahlberg's mustache was a bit bratty, wasn't it?
It's only in the post-credit scene as well. It's not even in the movie.
You called that.
Oh, dude,
so
yeah. That's Sony Marketing 101 is like thing you actually came for is in the post-credit. But in terms of Andrew Ryan, though, I feel like a lot of things have to go right for this BioShock adaptation. And like, hopefully they do that stuff well. I both do and don't want them to recreate that scene. Like, I think fans would be like, oh my God, it's that moment. But at the same time, if you're just redoing it, it's been done pretty perfectly in the game so far anyway. Next question from You Done Messed Up Aaron, who says, hope your days are going well, gentlemen. Wondering about Sifu. What old school martial arts movies do you think it draws on the most? I see a lot of Ong Bak and Old Boy. Old Boy, definitely.
Yeah, Old Boy, 100%. I mean, it's not an old school movie, but The Raid, 100%, going through the squats at the beginning feels very similar to that. I'd say that it draws a lot from Kill Bill, especially in the third boss battle. I mean, that is a direct recreation of that. Like, down to like the snowy background.
I'd throw some Jackie Chan in there just in terms of mentality in the fights. Because literally the ability you unlock to just like whip a bottle at someone or catch something out of the sky. If someone's throwing something at you, it feels pure Jackie Chan, even though other people have done it.
There is nothing more satisfying than when you're next to one of those little footstool things and like somebody's coming up towards you and they've got like a staff in their hand. They're like, oh, I'll take you on and just shove that right into them. They're like, what? My legs.
I think more games need, and that's the thing, more games need environmental interaction. Let me grab stuff off the walls. Let me do those things.
I will say that there's one thing that I wish that Sifu had, and that was a relentless dicking mode, which basically allowed you to, you know, when you stand over somebody and you punch them twice and bring them back up to their feet.
Just let them stay down.
Don't just punch them twice. Punch them twice, then boot them in the face, and then keep punching them more and more and more. If they're the last enemy, it should just allow you to do, you know, remember the Gears of War thing where you used to be able
to punch and just kept
on bam, 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 till the head exploded. Just do that, bam, bam, bam.
Because why can't you just burn a focus bar in that animation? To finish
and just kill them
off.
Straight away. Like, I mean, there you go.
Because like sometimes you're fighting enemies that you just wish would, the yellow guys, the guys that go into flame. Let me pace them. Like every time they come, I'm like, why are you getting him back up off the ground? I don't want to keep fighting him. I want you to stand on his face. And so
that'll be for the sequel, Sief 2.
Yeah, maybe. Next question from Mike, who says, Scott or Jules, who's going to adopt me?
The thing is that we don't know anything about this person who wants adopting. I mean, I'm a man of the people. I want to give people a second, you know, home, loving environment, stuff like that. I mean, I don't know if you knew this, but my mum was actually adopted. And it's one of those things where it's instilled in Kerry and I, like, if we were to ever have a kid, that's how the route that we would do
that's
it.
Nice.
Because of the fact that, you know, I'm not going to get on my little soapbox. Oh, wait, yes, I am. I personally believe that there's enough people in the world already that that need love and support in a home, so why not look at that as an option first?
That's a lovely message. I largely line up with that too. I think that so to be honest, probably both of us, maybe we do shared custody, maybe I'll
mate, that'd be wicked yeah. That'd be awesome. I get to see you more, and we'd also get to like teach the kid in different ways how to like approach gaming, because you would be like, okay, gaming is a life source and you'll be playing 20 hours a day minimum, and then there's me just be like, pick up the game of the year edition about 5 years down the line.
You get to play the one that's actually finished, whereas I'm slogged through the weird 30 FPS version. So next question from a Corel type show, who says, hope both of you are well. Do you guys think review embargoes are necessary, or does it only serve to prolong hypes around video game marketing? Something that I think gamers can do with less. Cheers from Indonesia. Also, question from Steve, who says, how does the review process affect your experience of games? Does having to rush through something or think more analytically affect your ability to just sit and enjoy the first experience? Yes. That's intentional. Yeah.
That's a very good pair of questions, and big love to Indonesia, by the way.
Yeah, man.
So I find that when we're reviewing games, personally, it's a lot more stressful than just being able to enjoy it in my own time because, yes, you do have to rush through. And unfortunately, people seem to only think that reviewing a game means that you have to have finished a game. And while I totally understand why that is, that doesn't actually necessarily need to ring true to give somebody an impression of what this game has to offer. Mm-hmm. I could recommend you a game even when I'm 80% through saying I am loving this game at the moment. And true, it may fall off the cliff in the end thing. But if I've 40, 50 hours in, I would still say that that is worth the price of admission to get that enjoyment factor. I do feel that we, the review embargoes are, they're a blessing and a curse. Obviously, you do get to enjoy the game beforehand and you have to abide by what the developer wants, but they can be used as an aggressive marketing campaign to actively withhold reviews from being bad and hurting game sales. And sometimes they can do so, like, for example, Elden Ring, we only got a code, but obviously, thank you very much, Bandai Namco, for sending us through one. Mm-hmm. But it's a case of, We got it yesterday. So it means that we don't have a review ready for launch day. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's what we're aiming for. You want a review to come in for launch day, but it means that it's sort of delayed and it affects the quality or the worthwhileness of having a review.
Well, there was a massive discussion around Elden Ring because this game seems to average about 80, 90 hours long. And there was a discussion as the embargoes went up from a bunch of different reviewers just asking each other, did you actually finish it? And I know IGN, whoever did the review for IGN did finish it, but a lot of people didn't. And there was a conversation around, you know, when a studio allocates review code and it's like, okay, turn this game around in a week. And I think both of us have crunched reviews before. Like I stayed up until 4 a.m. for Final Fantasy VII Remake, Uncharted 4 I did in a blur, Horizon I did in one weekend.
With Metroid Dread, I just absolutely powered through that game. And even though I absolutely loved it, I know that I probably would have had a better time overall if I was able to take my time and learn and go around and just explore a bit more. I was basically under the pressure of you have to speed run this game without even knowing anything about it.
Well, that's the thing. And I think I ultimately do think that the crunch a game in a week, in a couple of weeks, in a whatever, it's rarely more than a few days. Like nine times out of 10, it's here's the game. You got 2 days. Go get it done. I think that approach to stuff is outdated and is dying. I think that as we have podcasts, as we have, you know, even specifically to our culture, we can dissect a game for the next couple of years. Like, oh, this level was great. This plot twist was great. Like there, that, for me, that's all a version of review coverage in terms of an overall recommendation, even though I know that specifically it's put this one video together, put this one article together. I don't think people read article reviews anymore. I just don't think that's the case. I think people might look at what something like what we do, where it's a itemized pros and cons list. But I think people just want to know, is this worth my time? Like the hype is taken over, should I dive in or not? And that's largely what a review serves. But there is also the fact that the term review is such a search term that so many people get on that. And then, as is the questions are saying, that then folds back into the marketing, generates a lot of hype, generates a lot of sales. But it's a fascinating thing. I think we've had decades of this approach of everything skews towards the review, and a lot of outlets then abandon their coverage after that. Whereas, like, I would like to think that we do constant coverage of the vast majority of games, especially in the year that they're released. They'll pop up in all the lists, they'll pop up in the podcasts, and they'll sometimes be streamed. Like, we do as much as we can. I think that's our approach to review coverage, but it changes outlet to outlet.
It's a very strange thing because even like you say, outlet to outlet have got completely different views on what it is. Like H-Bomber Guy might put out a 3-hour long video on why you should play Fallout New Vegas 10 years after the fact, but that review is going to actually get more eyes on it than the IGN review of the same game did on the day of launch. Like, it's a case of picking your game and just doing what's right for the outlet rather than that. If it was up to me, I wouldn't want to have stuff out on day one of release, even though I know that it would get us better views. I'd want to have stuff that actually is more thought-provoking, thinking about the game, actually diving deep into the mechanics, and basically serving as a recommendation. Like, I don't like putting out videos of great length slagging on a game. Like, I don't think that works for the way I want to write, because I just think that what's the point? What's the point of taking an hour to complain about a game unless there's a conversation around it that changes the developer's perspectives moving forward?
That's the thing. I think some of it can be fascinating. Like, for me, like if someone did a 2-hour version of exactly what went wrong with Anthem or the Avengers or Mass Effect Andromeda, I would watch that.
Calling it a review is different. You know what I mean? It's a weird thing. I see some people putting out like hour long things saying why they absolutely hate this game, and it's like that game has lived rent free in your brain. That game won. That beat you because of the fact that you are now sitting here screaming into the void saying how much you hate it, but you're really just basically giving it more attention.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's the thing. I think some of it, like for me, it's all just part of the conversation. Like I love talking about games, and it's like, when's the first date we can talk about X thing? Well, sometimes maybe you get it early and you can talk about it on a specific day that lines up with when the public get access to it. Excuse me. Maybe we do a podcast earlier or something, but I love all parts of that conversation. You know, like, is it worth it? What's this plot twist? Like, let's talk about the story. Let's talk about the ending. Yep. Like I love all parts of that stuff.
I tell you what does really annoy me, though, is when you get discrepancies between review outlets. When we've talked to people who are just like, oh, I've actually had the game for 2 weeks. You've only had it for like one week. Like, I understand that there are some people that specialize in that game and are therefore more popular up the chain. But it does create a weird sort of like, oh, I've got exclusive access. I'm going to be able to actually provide this. I'm going to be able to do that. And it's like, are they buying your opinion the more early access they give you? Because clearly in their eyes, you're a more, air quotes, trusted and safe pair of hands.
There is like an invisible, there is like an invisible allocation thing, which makes sense. If you were a PR company, you're going to allocate the review to who's going to serve your title best. Like there was a time in years gone by where we weren't getting access to Ubisoft stuff because we were rightfully calling out the how naff a lot of those games were in a row. And we did the same thing with Bethesda many moons ago, many years ago, which is fair. I think if that's your job, allocate positive review coverage, and then you're not going to target the outlet who is slagging your studio off. That's fine. But overall, that whole thing of, you know, like review coverage and what does it serve and the mentality that you have to have going into it and the allocation that we have, it can be an insane crunch. And yes, it does affect your ability to play a video game. I personally think that you're better off just playing anything in a more relaxed setting. And I think that having now done this for 9 years, I don't care that much about getting something early. Like you're playing it in such a vacuum. You can't talk to anyone. Like no one knows any of the reference points you're hitting. It's way more fun to go through something and have a group chat ready and open and go, how far have you got? Did you see this? Oh my God, what about this plot twist? I love that a lot more. And going through something as a group is way more fun. And partnering it with a podcast or whatever, that, like, you know, that's just a better experience. So I do think the review stuff will die off eventually, but it's specifically up against how valuable the search term X game and then review is, because that's what people skew towards.
And you've obviously got the thing as well, because we are such a large organization, there's multiple voices here and we all have different opinions. If I come out and I say, what if I just said, like, I absolutely bloody hate Elden Ring, but you absolutely love it, like,
but that conversation is way more valuable than just one of us.
but that's fine. As a podcast, we can get to the middle ground and find out why I have those thoughts and why not. But if it was just me, if I was just given the review code and given the early access and we put it out day one, then what culture hates Elden Ring?
That
inspires a lot of ire, hatred within the community to therefore target us for more stuff. And it's not the voice of all of the people, it's the voice of the person who got that, like you say, because they're in a vacuum, they couldn't talk to anyone about it to understand that maybe this is why it was the way it was. Like, it's the review process is a very confusing one. Like, it's not as simple and clear cut as it pertains to be.
No, and like I said, I think all video games are a conversation. Like, and maybe that sounds a bit airy fairy, but I just think it is. Like, I think that you have day one impressions. You have, oh my God, is it worth it? Did they land the hype machine? Is it worth diving in day one? Like, it's a constant thing.
The amount of great discussions that you and I have had personally just over which games we like and which games we don't. And sometimes we've had it so that you start off one thing saying, I don't like this game, but talking to you or me about it, come out the other side saying, I appreciate that game. Like, I'm not going to write that game or franchise off. I'm going to give it another chance later down the line. And I feel like that is what's more important for the video game industry rather than just have, like, it was that they say in The Big Lebowski, everyone's opinions are like assholes, everybody's got one, like, you know what I mean? But if you actually chat to somebody about it, if you take your opinion, don't hold it as sacrosanct and allow it to be shaped and warped by actual feedback from others, then you'll come out as a more well-rounded individual. It's the same as just like any aspect in life. Don't be afraid to be wrong. Like,
yes, exactly. The thing is, we'll put all this pedal to the metal or whatever on Wednesday, because me, you and Josh will be talking about Elden Ring.
Yes, we will.
Played it by then.
Yes,
and we can dive in and see how right or wrong we are, whether the game lives up to all these different the 98 Metacritic stuff,
or whether or not you've managed to even get past the first
cutscene. Well, that's the thing. I'm looking out the window right now, Jules. It's still not here. Where is it? Where's my badges and everything? But yeah, for now though, this has been the Untitled Bandit Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much for listening and sending in your questions. The UBP, the UBP.
UBP.
The UBP. And we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much.
But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.